This is All of It. I'm Kushan Avidar in for Allison Stewart. If you've ever run a marathon, you know there's a lot that goes into it. You got to train hard, stick to a diet, maybe sacrifice your social life. It's an accomplishment just to get to the starting line. But for inmates at San Quentin Prison in California, preparing for a marathon presents a whole other set of challenges. There's limited time to train during the day. Sudden safety lockdowns can disrupt your training schedule. You're stuck with prison food. And despite these challenges, inmates at San Quentin take it on. They run a full marathon, all 26.2 miles, inside the prison walls. The film 26.2 to Life is a documentary that traces a group of men who decide to run this race. It's called the San Quentin Marathon. And along the way, the film explores more than the race. It delves into their lives, how these inmates use running as a means to work towards their freedom and their redemption. 26.2 to Life is available to stream on ESPN Plus. And with us today, right now, to talk about it is director Christine Yu. Hey, Christine, welcome to All of It.
Hey, how are you? Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being here. I watched the documentary as a runner myself. I was so interested in watching it and learning about this training and what they go through. But my understanding is that you kind of stumbled onto the San Quentin Marathon. Is that right?
I did. It was one of just those, you know, weekend mornings when I was flipping through my Apple News feed, and then suddenly I saw this article that was like taking me inside the San Quentin Marathon in a GQ magazine article. And it was just one of those moments in life where by the end of it, I knew that somehow I had to make this a film. Though originally it was going to be a regular narrative type of film, a regular motion picture type of project. But then when I started going into the prison and interviewing people and observing, I thought I have to do this as a documentary.
Oh, wow. So originally you were going to make a movie, not just a documentary, right? Like you were going to write new characters. Tell me about that process. What made you change? Was there a moment where you thought, no, this is a documentary movie?
I mean, so when I first went into the prison, of course, I didn't know what to expect. I was going in there to observe a half marathon event. And I entered with the coaches, going down onto the San Quentin yard, you know, for the first time. And, you know, you have to walk all the way down. It's probably about quarter of a mile, half a mile to your final destination from the time you enter through the gates. And as the men were gathering before that half marathon event, the feeling was festive, I have to say. And that feeling of festivity inside a prison struck me as very ironic and, you know, and just completely turned my expectations and preconceived notions about prison upside down. And then when I started talking with the guys, and some of them were making me laugh, you know, and again, that was just such an unexpected thing I felt to happen inside prison walls, you know. But as I started thinking about it more, I thought, well, you know, just because people are in prison, it doesn't mean that they stop being themselves.
Yeah. And I know you have a personal relationship with the prison system. How did that impact your drive to start this film?
Yes. Late 90s, early 2000s, I had a friend that was wrongfully convicted. And so he was sentenced to 271 years in California State Prison. He was also Korean American. So I was deeply impacted by his situation. That definitely led me to questioning, just wondering if I had to spend the rest of my days inside a prison, you know, what does that look like? What does that look like for people? So I felt that the marathon was a great, you know, metaphor, but also a great opportunity to explore that question.
Listeners, if you're just joining us, we're talking about the new documentary 26.2 to Life. It's a documentary about the San Quentin Marathon, where prisoners inside of the San Quentin prison run a full marathon and train for it living inside the prison walls. It's streaming now on ESPN Plus, and we're talking to the director, Christine Yu. And Christine, I think it'd be best to hear from someone in your film about what the actual marathon route is like. Here's a clip from your film where a few trainers explain the route.
The San Quentin Marathon is way harder than any of the hardest hilly marathons that I ran outside of here. Now, I don't want to even call it a track because it's a loop with 690-degree turns in it. That's hard. And plus, you're running in an environment where there's a couple thousand other people out VR and you kind of got to move around them. I mean, most of the guys are very, very respectful, but...
Markel, you're doing great.
Is there a better punishment than running? That's every other sport's punishment. Go run 10 laps or whatever, right?
If a marathon trainer says it's tough, then you know the route is definitely going to be tough. When you first learned about the marathon route, what went through your mind?
I mean, these guys are, you know, it's like, you know, running on a hamster wheel type of thing. And I've run that loop before, that pathway inside the prison. I would go inside and, you know, continued to run with the guys. And it's a hard pathway because it's got uphill slope and a downhill slope. And then, you know, the yard doesn't shut down for the marathon. Mm. So if people are unaware of what's going on, you know, you have all kinds of people crisscrossing, going in opposite directions. So, yeah, it's dizzying.
Were you a runner before you started doing this documentary?
I've definitely been a runner all my life. I'm not a marathoner, though.
Got it. But you could tell there was difficulties in this route beyond just the difficulties of running. I mean, I think it's interesting how the trainer said running is everyone's punishment, which is a hilarious line. Did the inmates who ran it also share that attitude, did you feel?
Absolutely not. I mean, most guys are running because in the beginning, they're running mostly for health purposes. You know, I want to lose weight. I want to get in shape. But over the course of, you know, joining the club, I think what they realize is that what they're part of is a community that actually forms. This is a community of people of all races. Inside prison, it's usually a highly segregated type of environment. So it's a time to, you know, get outside many walls, so to speak, you know, and also have an opportunity to interface with free people, you know, the volunteers that go in. Many men have lost contact, you know, with family members and friends over long periods of incarceration.
You know, that community element really stuck out to me. And I was wondering, in your experience, did you see it crossing borders? Because we talk a lot about in prisons and, you know, in this movie as well, how you kind of have to choose a side once you go into prison. This club, the 1,000 Mile Club, which is what the trainers put on, did you see folks interacting with each other as a community outside of what those normal affiliations were in the prison culture?
Yes, I can tell you from just anecdotal experience, field research experience, these are bonds that, you know, go outside of the 90-minute workout that these guys have or the races. At the same time, there is something really unique about San Quentin as a prison site. It's actually recently been in the middle of undergoing a transformation to a rehabilitation center from California Governor Gavin Newsom. So it's gone from being this place, you know, notorious for violence to a place of rehabilitation and an emphasis on programming.
Is that part of the reason why the 1,000 Mile Club was able to start, or did that predate that kind of renovation that you're describing?
Yes, it did predate it. However, the club started in 2005 under the circumstances that California at that time was seriously overcrowded in terms of its prisons. And so the Supreme Court of the state, they mandated that the prison had to reduce its population. So at that time, they started to, much to the prison's facilities credit, they started to open up the prison to volunteer programs, engage with the community. You know, San Quentin is literally located on San Francisco's Bay, mm-hmm. you know, in a very liberal city, really. So it opened up to the idea of community engagement, and that's had a really deep impact on the outcomes of a lot of guys who get out.
Folks, if you're just joining us, we're talking to director Christine Yu about her new documentary. It's 26.2 to Life. It's a documentary about the San Quentin Marathon. It's streaming now on ESPN Plus. Christine, I'd love to talk about some of the characters in the story as well. Let's talk about Markel. His name is Markel Taylor, nicknamed the Gazelle. That's how I remembered him. It was due to his speed. He was recruited to run track for college, but he dropped out and got entangled in criminal activity. And that's kind of where we meet him, but what his story is when we meet him. What was it about Markel's story that really compelled you?
I met Markel on that very first day. I actually was inside. And of course, he was the guy I was told that broke all the records, you know, the fastest man of San Quentin. And he was very mild-mannered, you know, very soft-spoken. I sort of had no idea what to expect. But as I got into, you know, his story and his background, I mean, his story really speaks to the, you know, foster care to prison pipeline that exists. You know, he came from a very damaged home, abusive home. That's, you know, his story is a common story in terms of that.
We saw a part of the movie was Markel working with an attorney to reduce his sentence early for good standing. Did running the marathon play a role in that?
I think that running in general for a lot of the guys who are members of the club, what it does is, you know, you have to kind of remember that a lot, you know, people who end up in prison, we can consider them society's failures, right, in many ways. And so a lot of these guys have never really had the support prior to their incarceration to set goals for themselves, to complete anything. So for a lot of these guys who say, I can suddenly run 5 miles, I mean, that may be the biggest accomplishment they've had up to that time and place. And so what that does is that sets off a, you know, newfound confidence. And I'm sure, as you know, with newfound confidence, people can do anything. And so it sort of creates a platform for people to, then say, hey, I can get my GED. I can reconnect with family members. So it creates a cycle of, you know, positive programming, pro-social behaviors that impact people, hopefully for release. And I can say that, you know, out of the club members that have been released, well over 50 at this point, you know, there is a 0% recidivism rate.
Wow. It reminds me of Tommy, another character. He's an inmate who runs the marathon. He was convicted of voluntary manslaughter. Let's listen to a clip of him reflecting on his journey.
And as soon as it happened, I knew my life was done. And that's why I just told him, give me anything without a life sentence, I'm guilty. And I've never been to a trial. I've always took a deal. 5 times I took a deal because I'm guilty. I mean, I'm not going to waste the state's money and sit in a county jail and just give me the deal. Came back and said, plead guilty to voluntary manslaughter. Okay, cool. That's 11 years. No, but you're a 3-striker, so they strike that strike. That 11 turns into 22. Then you get 5 years for each prior prison term. That's 15 more. And 10 for the gun and 10 for the gang. So it's a total of 46 years of enhancements on that charge. All I had to do is just keep going to work and going home. But no, I had to go over to that house that night to come up one more time. I mean, did I really win the fight that night? Did I really win to grow old and die in prison? I've been sober and gang-free for 15 years now, so I'm off to a good start. My wife pushes me to believe that I'm going to be out before calendars. That's her exact words, so hopefully, honey. It's 2053 is my EPRD, earliest possible release date. I'll be 86 years old. If I keep running, I'll be all right. You gotta stay positive.
Christine, the inmates end up sharing so much about their lives to the camera. They're vulnerable and they're candid about their regrets, their mistakes, their future, their hopes. How did you establish that trust with them?
Well, I'll add one thing. When I was interviewing Tommy, this is just kind of a fun background
production.
But the DP was literally sitting on Tommy's
toilet.
That's
the director of photography you're talking about?
Yeah. And I was sitting probably right on top of him. Much to the credit of these guys. Of course, I spent a lot of time inside the prison when the cameras were not rolling. You have to kind of remember that most cameras that go into the prison, you know, from news sources, news media, they're going usually in there for an hour for a few sound bites that they know that they want. But our approach essentially was to go slow, although we didn't have any choice either, I'll say. And so I think that over time, we developed genuine relationships with the guys in the film, with many of the members of the club that you don't see in the film as well.
I found it interesting that you said you had to go slow. You had no choice. You're talking about from like the production logistics aspect of trying to go into a prison to record. What did that look like?
Yeah, you know, it took about 9 months initially to get, you know, even clearance to go in. But, you know, here's the thing is that they don't have to let you in, you know, if even when you shoot once, there is no guarantee that they're going to let you back in. So we were always very aware that, you know, this could all shut down at any given time. And so it made us extra cautious, but we went in, like I said, when the cameras weren't rolling a lot, you know, just to hang out with the guys, to get to understand what the club really was like and the community that San Quentin is.
Mm-hmm. Folks, if you're just joining us, we're talking about the new documentary 26.2 to Life. It's a documentary about the San Quentin Marathon run by the inmates. It's streaming now on ESPN Plus. We've got the director, Christine Yu, with us. I want to talk about reintegration for a second, because, you know, in Tommy's clip that we just heard a couple minutes ago, he was talking about the compounding sentences. And really, you focus on these men to tell a bigger story about the carceral system. What were some of your biggest findings, some of your biggest frustrations, something that gives you hope?
I mean, these enhancements, you know, the consecutive enhancements to the original sentencing. It's, you know, punitive. It's something that came out of the 90s tough on crime super predator era. But, you know, the data shows that basically when people, 90% of people who are in prison do eventually find their way out somehow through early release initiatives. However, there's a very high recidivism rate, though, at the same time. And while you have the 1,000-mile club with the 0% recidivism rate, you know, why? Why is that? You know, and I think a lot of it has to basically do with access to programs. You know, you have to give people something to do. If we really want to reduce recidivism, if we really want to try to make a dent into the incarceration system, I think we have to offer people programs. It's, proven. And also there's a lot of data around the fact that people age out of crime. You know, as people get older, there's a tendency not to commit crimes. You know, you do stupid stuff when you're young, right? So, and that's the majority age when people commit crimes in their teens and their 20s. So, you know, I mean, I think that we have to look at building a system that addresses, you know, those life changes. Would you do the same stuff as that you did in your 20s and try to build pathways for people? The to get out and to show that they've changed, you know, and many of these guys who have had serious addiction problems, et cetera, you know, these are people who are very fit to, you know, help some of society's worst problems, you know, through their own, you know, lived experiences.
You know, I'd also love to get into the process for you of making this film. I mean, I wonder if gender played a role in this project at all. You were a woman filming in an all-male prison. What was that like? If anything, there might be nothing to it, but did that play a role when you were actually going to produce the movie?
You know, a lot of people have brought that up. I'll add that my whole producing team, we were all women. Going in there, but I'll say that we never, I never felt threatened in any way. You know, usually people are very courteous to outsiders. Obviously, they know that it's a privilege for people to go inside. You know, I mean, I'm a small Asian woman. So, you know, maybe in some ways, maybe that helped me. To, you know, I don't think I have a very threatening disposition. And I think people just genuinely saw that we cared. We cared to get the real story and we cared to get the nuanced story.
Absolutely. And, you know, that care really comes through because for me, the film also made me think about the term second chances. What do second chances mean in your life? And now after having this film and looking back on it.
Well, as I was saying earlier, I think that we owe it to ourselves as a society to consider giving more people second chances. You know, I mean, as I mentioned, these are some of the very people who have been through, you know, hell and back and have learned through a lot. They've done a lot. A lot of these guys have done a tremendous amount of work on themselves, you know, internal work, trying to find root causes of violence through restorative justice practices, you know, anti-anger, anti-violence practices. And I think that a lot of this stuff can actually help people here out in the free world. One of the things that I hear a lot, interestingly enough, from guys who get out, you know, and these are guys who have been inside sometimes for 20 or 30 years, you know, they say, man, you know, coming outside here, I am so surprised at how quick people are to get like tough and angry, you know, and you're dealing with guys who have been in prison, you know, for 20 or 30 years.
Wow. You know, and just thinking about it, wrapping up here, we got maybe, you know, 20 seconds or so. I'm just interested. Do you have any thoughts on doing a marathon after producing this? Any desire to run one yourself?
We've been through a movie marathon.
Fair enough. You've shed your blood, sweat, and tears. Oh, sorry, go ahead. What are you saying?
I said, I'll leave it at that.
You leave it at that. All right, let's leave it at that. The documentary is called 26.2 to Life. We've been talking to director Christine Yu. It's streaming now on ESPN+. Christine, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.